Les colloques du Collège de France.
This is very good. So I think we have now Prisca Liberelli from Basel, the FMI, who's going to talk about organoids. I don't know what the title of your talk is, Prisca. Decoding the design principles of tissue organization. So we are sorry that Prisca was not with us today, but at least she's online. And we look forward to your talk, Prisca.
So I hope you all hear me well.
I'm really sorry. We do hear you very well.
Huh? Very loud, so I don't have to shout. So I was really looking forward to come, my problem with the flights. So today I would like to show you some of the work, some of published and some unpublished, on how we are trying to understand design principle of tissue organization, especially in intestinal organoids. One of the main scales that we are interested in is to look how individual cells cross biological scales to create multicellular system. And per se, we're not interested in tissues, in organs, but really what is the higher order property that come from interaction of cells and of different cells. And the main challenge we have is that these tissues are not constructed machine. They're not constructed top down with individual pieces together. They're mainly built bottom up with individual cells growing and dividing and really sensing, as we have heard before, this like sensing on both where and where they are. And so part of this is genetically wired to make really the process very precise and reproducible. But clearly the organoids and a lot of what we have been seeing in the past is showing us that the cells have intrinsic self-organization and space-time coordination, that in a way need to really show sense where they are and when they are to really behave accordingly, make the process very robust and contextual. What we are therefore interested in is to try to understand the space coordination of the cells. What we are interested in is how individual cells generate emerge the skin, but especially what are the feedbacks that coordinate the behavior of individuals. What are the tissue skin property that feedback on the individual cells to make really the system robust? To study this process, we look at the intestine. The intestine is a very spatial organized organ with a stem cell niche, with stem cells and Paneth cells, and the full villi above. To look at it in a more cellular molecular, you can see here, this is the stem cell niche with the stem cells and Paneth cells. Here, the transit-lymphatic cells and all the absorptive cells. The reason we started working with is because already in 2009, Hans Clever showed that a single LGR5 positive stem cells, that is on the bottom of the niche, can form a fully formed organoid in up to 5 to 6 days. At the end, this organoid recapitulates not only the cell type of composition, but also the spatial organization of the organoids. What we were very interested in is more the initial days, is how can an individual cell is able to form a fully formed organoid and how an individual cells can create these patterns in vitro. So how individual cells actually sense extrinsic cue from the environment to take individual but coordinated decisions. This is one of the movie we have of the organoid. You can see an individual cells growing and dividing. The lumen is formed very early, as you can see it here on the left. And on the right is a scan, it's like a single slit plane, while on the left you have a full maximum intensity projection. The cells divide very coordinated, and they go 2, 4, 8, 16, 32, and then they are very polarized from the beginning, with the big side on the outside and on the apical side here. So this is very interesting to look at, and we have been looking at many of these movies, but the problem is that organoids are not growing in the same way as a developmental organism. It's much less stereotypical, and they're also their speed in growth is very different. So we really had to go and move back in a more high-throughput type of process where we don't look at the organoid life, but we do time course experiment. We start from mouse intestinal organoids, then we take LGR5 positive and LGR5 negative cells. We plate them in different plates and in different wells, and then we can image them at different time points. What we do is to also increase the information we have on these organoids is that we use multiplexed imaging where we can stain with normal antibody in an iterative way. In this case, for example, you see a 12-plex organoid staining where the same organoid has been stained for 12 different rounds with different antibodies. We then, from this, segment nuclei, cells, and organoids. What we showed some years ago is that the formation of organoids from this individual cell has an initial phase where they completely lose stem cells. This is quite interesting because we see that then the first cells that come back later on are the Paneth cell, so the other cell type in the niche, and the LGR5. So then you have the LGR5 and the positive cells in there. So this is how this trajectory that we do in multivariate feature space looks like, where you can see that the LGR5 is lost and reacquired only after PCNA. So our question was, what is actually happening in the first days? What was happening is this first very strong activation of YAP1. Interestingly, YAP1 is clearly, as many of you know, really a sensor of some mechanical property of the cells and some density of the cells, and it has been shown that, you know, the translocation of YAP depends on the density of cells, but has also been shown very important for the regeneration of the intestinal epithelium, where YAP gets activated in a growth factor dependent manner in regeneration. And so what we were then looking for was trying to see if this system is actually useful to understand some of the aspect in vivo and of regenerative response of the intestine. So what we did a compound screen, really using the accessibility of this system. And what we did, again, we put the individual cells in the wells, we do the imaging, and we first look at the number of phenotypes that emerge, and there are 9 really main phenotypes. We did a very system biology analysis of both the compound profile, selected the target, and inferred genetic interaction network from these. But then we really focused on the regenerative landscape. That is this regenerative also response, that is this phenotype here, that doesn't express any different cell type, but is very high in YAP. So looking into this, we were able to find some compounds that don't activate regeneration in vivo, but actually maintain regeneration longer. And some of these compounds, or these RXR inhibitors that we really tried then in vivo, where we injured the intestine giving like irradiation and then treating for 3 days after irradiation. And as you can see here, the mouse lose much less weight, but especially the tissue is much less damaged. And we could show that this is really a regenerative response of the intestine that is maintained longer. We are very interested in this response of the RXR because what we know is that it's regulating YAP translocation via JUPA. We are working currently into it because I think it would be very interesting to understand what is this regenerative response and if we can be very specific in not activating YAP, but maintaining YAP activation for longer. And I think this would be really great for long-term understanding of the regenerative process. But to do this, we are trying now to move into human organoids to look at this human regenerative response. We have protocols now to grow human organoids from individual human cells, from a single cell that recapitulate the same regenerative response, very similar to some of the regenerative response in human. And so we are now trying to understand first what's the human-to-human variability in this regenerative response and to see what are the molecular partner there. And so this is the first part where really introducing this intestinal organoid where we can start from individual cells. We have a regenerative response of the epithelium where we can see a YAP activation. And this, I will now come more in this YAP deactivation. Because what we know is that what happens is that in these first days, what we have a population of homogeneous cells. They all come from the same individual cell. And what happened is that these cells that divide synchronously, so 8, 16, and at the 16 cell stage, we have the formation of the first notch deltas. And this was quite interesting because it's very reproducible that between 16 and 32, we get the first delta cell. This first delta cell in the future will become the Paneth cell, that is our first cell type that we see in the organoids, that then also determine where the future stem cells will emerge. And so our question is, how do we then return to homeostasis? Because this is really a regenerative response of the epithelium, fully in vitro, this YAP heterogeneity, then, and this YAP activation, then brings back the system to homeostasis. There's a sensor that actually tells the system between 16 and 32 cells that it's time to go back to homeostasis, and it's time to break symmetry, that it means to start making the first cell type that is different, and then it's really starting a first new system. And so to try to understand how we think about it, this is our cell intrinsic mechanism, so individual cells that sense the extrinsic cue to drive the collective behavior. That means that individual cells are in the right space to understand better their environment. So in a way, we start from a genetically environment, identical cell, and the first really emergent property of a population of cells, at least we believe, is really this cell-to-cell variability at the population scale. And this is both an intrinsic and extrinsic variability. You can imagine cells at different cell cycle stages. They are at different transcription level. They have different metabolic identities or different adhesion codes. These are still, in a way, how we call them. We call them, like, in a way, metastable cellular states. These are reversible cellular states, but that still give the cells a very different way to interpret their environment. That means that even in the same environment and in the same conditions and with the same growth factor in the medium, what they have is that some cells will have a higher probability to differentiate. And this is the symmetry breaking and fully irreversible event, where the irreversibility of the system then gives the hotspot to form this emergent level property. So to do this, clearly, and I won't go into the details of what intrinsic and extrinsic cues are, because I think we could all partially argue on what actually is intrinsic and what is extrinsic. Metabolism is clearly one of them. One is like the intrinsic cellular states that depend on mitochondrial abundance and the state of your mitochondria. But on the other side is also the external one on what are the signaling you receive. And so we have these cell-to-cell variability at the tissue scale, where individual cells are different. But actually, this is integrated in individual cells' behavior, because we know that at that point, we have one or two cells in the 16 that become delta cells. So this is what we know. We know that then at a certain point, we have a Paneth cell. The Paneth cells emerge around 64 cell stage. We have this first peak of YAP. We know that this peak of YAP is important to erase cell type identity. In these first days, the cells lose all cell type identity of the intestine. They maintain intestinal identity, so they still maintain CDX2, for example, but they lose all different cell type, and they are in these YAP-positive regenerative cells. And at a certain point, YAP is lost and reacquired. There's the Paneth cells, as I said just before, there's the emergence of the delta cell. And what we know is that this happens between 16 and 32 cell stage. We know that this is in the heterogeneity in the system is very important, because when we have heterogeneous YAP, and as you can see, some cells are very strong nuclear YAP, some cells are very low, we know that the delta cell is always very high in YAP and requires heterogeneity in the system. Because when we have YAP everywhere high, we don't break symmetry. When we have everywhere low YAP, we don't break symmetry. And as you can see here, when we have no YAP or very high YAP, we never break symmetry. While in the case of EREC, where we increase the heterogeneity of YAP, we increase symmetry breaking. So what we had at that time is that we need this heterogeneity in YAP to determine the notch delta, but this is necessary, but it's not sufficient for the system, because we also have other YAP high cells that are actually not becoming delta. So the exact mechanism and how our cells integrate the system is the signal is really not clear. On the first thing we tried to do was, can we then control YAP heterogeneity to then control symmetry breaking? Is this fully stochastic, or can we actually control symmetry breaking, controlling YAP heterogeneity? And what we did here in collaboration with Matthias Lutolf is to drive, to design some like microwells with some stamps that then can grow organoid in a really confined space of a specific cell. So we can have round organoids or elongated organoids that are like really rectangular. And here you can see is that while we can confine the organoid and they're all very rectangular, we can confine symmetry breaking and we start having delta Punnett cells only at the edge. And this really then determines the future crypt formation. So we can determine the morphology of the organoid by determining where symmetry breaking is happening. And when we start looking at YAP and delta, you can see that then the delta, the YAP high cell will become the delta cell. And this is happening really in the moment part of the curvature. While on the long side, where YAP is all more high, we never have symmetry breaking. So we know that we can control it, but what is really the first question was, what is actually YAP sensing? I think this is a question that we won't answer in the next years, but it's, I think, really an outstanding question in the field is like, what is YAP sensing? Is it really mechanics of the extracellular matrix? Is something of the epithelium per se? Is something about the polarization? Is a tissue scale property, or is it an intrinsic individual cell property? And so this is some of the work we start doing, and this is especially is the work of Connie Speyer, that is a postdoc in the lab. And so she's really trying to understand on one side, what's the role of YAP and what is YAP sensing and how this is integrated at the tissue scale to then break symmetry. Here you can see a symmetry broken organoid on the top with the delta cells in yellow. And in the bottom, you see the HES1 and the lateral inhibition that really emerge over time. Here, this is, I'm showing some of the data because I will show a lot of graph and quantification. Looks trivial, but this has been really very long work that all my lab has been really, dedicating a lot of time. And what they were able to really do is to start having single cell and single nuclei resolution over 10,000 and 100,000 organoids in a multiplex way. And so this was really great. You can see this is some of the work also for, so I'm showing some of the work of some of the different people, and not only for small organoids, but for all the way to very big organoids. And in this case, again, we went back and the first question that we had, and we're still like working on it, but is there a critical number for symmetry breaking, or is there a timer? We first know that if we take organoid, single cells from organoid at all different stages, we can take them and start from scratch, and it happens exactly at the same time. So we know there's no, at least timer per se, that then there's, when you start, then the cells will do it intrinsically alone. What we did, and this is, I think, is a really interesting experiment, what Connie did is first did nocodazole and Taxol experiment, and so she blocked the cells always below the 16 to 32 cell stage. And then what she did is to wash out the Taxol and then letting the cells recover and grow above the 16 to 32. And that was what was very interesting. So if we keep the cells between 16, there's no symmetry breaking. We wash the Taxol and the cells start breaking symmetry. So there's really something in this physical 16 to 32 number that, again, we don't believe it's fully just the number of cells, but it's something at the tissue scale on the polarization of the epithelium and probably on the mechanical property of the epithelium that determine this number. We are currently doing an experiment now also blocking the cell cycle, so with the different double thymidine blocks and not only looking at microtubule, but I think these are really strong indication that there's a way, this as a sensor of cell density or number of cells per tissue size. Then we start looking at different property at the tissue scale. And you can see that the polarity is very different. If you look at ZO1 in the symmetry broken one, they're really very well apical basally polarized. While in the non-symmetry broken one, you lose this very good symmetry polarization. And also if you start perturbing polarization and then you can start growing organoids that are very stretched. And so they have very high up everywhere. And we see that these never have symmetric broken organoids. So clearly we need this polarization of the system to get the heterogeneity in YAP, to get our delta cell. The other part that was also quite clear, if you start looking at phosphomyosin, it's really clear that the myosin activity is very different. And there's like a much higher myosin activity in the organoid. Again, also here, when we treat the organoid with blebbistatin, we don't have symmetry breaking. So there's something mechanically that takes these 16 to 30, 32 cells and make them much more, maybe even compact, if I can use this term. So at this point, what our working hypothesis right now is that YAP is a sensor of tissue integrity and is a tissue scale property where the mechanical property of the cells and then the density of the cells are sensed. And when this is happening, YAP starts to become heterogeneous. Because we don't see great correlation between YAP size, nuclear YAP and cell size, nuclear size. So we really think it's a tissue scale property. So we are still working on it. But I think these data are bringing us to the point that this YAP is sensing when is the moment to go back to homeostasis and to actually, you know, saying, and for epithelium, this also makes sense because what you have is that you have an injury, you need a very strong, fast proliferation. And at a certain point, there's something that says, okay, now it's time, we have enough cells, the tissue is repaired, we can go back in making the cell type that are required. And so this is, again, part of our working model. We have this cell-to-cell variability, we have this notch delta lateral inhibition. So the other question we really had is like, how YAP heterogeneity drives notch delta? We know that actually there's no TEAD1 and TEAD4, so the cofactors of YAP binding site on delta. It's not that all YAP high cells have a lot of delta, so it's not a direct event. And so for this, we started a collaboration with Edward Anezo and David to try to model how heterogeneity at the tissue scale can drive the notch delta heterogeneity. And I will cut on the model, unfortunately, for sake of time to get some of the latest result. But what is one of the results that we have been using is the one I showed you at the beginning. What we know is that when we use a YAP activator, it is very high, we don't have symmetry breaking, but we have slight activity, slight level, like a bit higher level of delta a bit everywhere. And so what we think is actually, and this is like a prediction of the model, is that what is YAP doing is pre-patterning the system to create this heterogeneity in reversible metastable cell states. And these are still maintaining in a differentiated state, but they are brought to a D0 state that is a bit higher in delta for sure already, but also it has a much higher probability to then drive the delta notch type of event that is the reversible state. So that this YAP create this heterogeneity. And so we were then wanting and looking back on our system, are there other properties that are important in the system? And this is where, as I showed you, there are the mechanical and the polarization state. We looked at signaling state. But there was really the metabolic profiles. When we did the multiplexing, were really strongly different. And here you can see that if we start looking at fatty acid oxidation, you see the organoids that break symmetry have much lower fatty acid oxidation than the ones that don't break symmetry. And on the same level, if you look at the opposite and looking more at glycolysis and process of glycolytic in this with the exokinase, you can see that the organoids that break symmetry are much more glycolytic, and not only at the organoid size, but individual cells, as you can see here, that are delta positive are much higher in exokinase. And part of this, and what we think, is that it's really mediated by IMPK as a metabolic sensor. What we find still very interesting is that how do you create this heterogeneity of metabolic state at the tissue scale? So how a population of cells actually has cells in the same organoid at the 16-cell stage that some of them are more glycolytic and some of them are, have more fatty acid oxidation. So how is metabolic heterogeneity at the tissue scale is actually a question we really are still trying to work on and very happy to have any discussion around it. We see that indeed also perturbing the glycolytic state, this is very important. So you see that if we increase glucose or we inhibit fatty acid oxidation, we increase phospho-MPK, so we increase the sensor of it, and this one really strongly increase not only number of organoids that break symmetry, but increase number of cells that break symmetry per organoid. And I think this is a very interesting difference, is that we are probably in a system where what we think is that this symmetry broken cell, where we have this apical basal polarity, so cells need to be properly polarized. They need to have this initial contraction and then this reduction of contractility. But then they also need this bias into toward a glycolytic state. And so to try to make a little graphical around it, because it's still really a lot of work, we have on one side these mechanosensing that is YAP regulated. We think it's some tissue level property. We have the glucose and the ATP and the energy metabolism sensing, and these are integrated in the individual cell. You know, and these are both the extrinsic and intrinsic cues, and then we are like, what is actually sensing and how is it integrated? And so if I manage to, and this is not only happening at in the full cells, in the all 16 cells, but one individual cell in the 16 cell organoids. So to understand and to try really to maybe fish out really the integrator, what we did a single cell RNA-seq and a single cell ATAC6 time course. So this is very similar to the imaging experiment you saw, but what we see here, these are cells, day one, the green, and in this case, on the right, you see the bit of a circle that goes towards more absorptive cells, and here you go on the left to the more secretory cells. Here on the left, you see the ATAC-seq. And what we were really interested when we start looking at the cell type, as here color-coded by the different cell, is that when you look at the ATAC-seq, that is actually the accessibility of the DNA, and it's like really what can be accessed, is that the cells here, these are the regenerative cells that then move to absorptive cells. That is the main cell type. So it looks like, as you see in this cloud, that there's a default state that actually an intestinal cell, stem cells, actually wants to make enterocytes. This also makes sense. The major function is actually to absorb and to make all these cell types. While everything that comes more absorbed, secretory, so the stem cell niche, Paneth cells, is also evolutionary much later. And also the enteroendocrine that really sends hormones and are very different. And so what you see here is that what is probably happening is that, you know, there is a sensing of the of if you want to become a secretory cell or an absorptive cell. And that actually making a secretory cell is, you know, leaving a default state. What we did is to try to understand is to map transcription factor binding in the ATAC-seq and the single cell RNA-seq expression data. And clearly this exiting from a default state, because we actually don't find almost no transcription factor for the main default state, because the cells just go and move and then you express some more. But here you start having pioneering factors that then change very strongly the chromatin. We have all the others, we won't speak about it. And here, just to show, is exactly what I was trying to show you also in the previous one. Here we see how accessibility of the DNA change. And then if you see here, all the stem cells and the enterocyte, they just slowly close accessible sites. So they differentiate less, you know, part of the DNA gets accessible, but they don't open new one. While there is a huge chromatin remodeling in secretory differentiation and especially in Paneth cell differentiation. And this is all driven by FOXA2. So in a way, we see that here you see the FOXA starts very early during the secretory differentiation. And then when we stain for it, and you can see here In the third one, you have the FOXA cells, and FOXA start to be expressed much higher and before the Delta. So what we think at this point, and here is all the quantification, so FOXA1 precedes the Delta emergence and is the pioneering factor to then change chromatin and to take these cells out of their default states. This is some really very recent data. And then what we see using the YAP activator that I showed you before, that we have higher Delta, and but every, like slightly everywhere. At this point, what we see is that with the YAP activator, we have a very similar FOXA1 state, that the YAP activation actually brings the cells in a pre-patterned state that is already very different at the chromatin level. So at this point, and this is my last slide on the summary, is really, we know that there's the YAP mechanosensing. We know that some of these mechanosensation goes via FOXA1 that change chromatin state. And so in a way, our question that was, how is symmetry broken can be changed in how do cells leave a default state and how mechanical cues really drive this change on default states. But really, how is then the energy and the metabolic sensing integrated? We have some data that might show that it's really upstream FOXA, that is actually FOXA integrating both. But really, the interplay also between YAP and phospho-MPK, I think, will be very interesting. And we have some experiments currently running. So with this, I hope I could show you some of the work currently doing in the lab that is trying to understand how symmetry breaking is regulated in intestinal organoid, in a way how a regenerative state moves back to homeostasis and a default, and how individual cells leave the default state of differentiation, integrating both mechanical and metabolic sensor through chromatin remodeling. And this is probably what we think, is that YAP drives, you know, this pre-patterning. So there's a pre-patterning of Delta via multimodal integration of heterogeneity at the tissue scale. Then none of these is fully cell intrinsic, but we have heterogeneity, both mechanical and metabolic, at the tissue scale that have different cellular state over time. And so with this, I hope I'm still in time. I don't have a timer, I'm sorry. And I hope I could show you how we are using the organoid to look at individual cells creating a complex pattern in vitro in a very controlled way. We can look at a in vitro regenerative response of the intestinal epithelium, and I'm trying also to translate this to human regeneration. We have been looking at the RXR and retinoid acid, at this balance between regeneration and homeostasis. And this really clearly brings us back at the role of both metabolic and mechanical heterogeneity in pre-patterning the population of cells for the emergence of the Delta, first Delta cell. With this, I would really like to thank the full lab. This is has been really an adventure in this year to try to use these organoids and then really to develop new technology to answer very interesting question, both, you know, on symmetry breaking, but also on trying to translate them in V. With this, especially, I would like to thank Silvia and Connie that have been the main contributor of the symmetry breaking part and unpublished work.
Retrouvez tous les contenus du Collège de France sur www.college-de-france.fr.